This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat.
I'm Vizla Kumarisen.
And you're listening to Digital Desires. Okay, so today we're going to talk about how Facebook makes us miserable. And this is something that we've touched on since the beginning of the show, but now we have facts to back it up. So there's this particular study out of Yale that was conducted over 3 years and over a sample of 5,000 adults. And the interesting thing about this study is that it tracks both your online mental health and offline mental health. This is self-reported mental health. And in particular, they also look at likes, clicks, and your own status. So it's very actively monitoring the usage as well as comparing with the moves offline.
That's right. And I think I was quite intrigued by the results of the study. I mean, firstly, the fact that they spent 3 years studying people's use of Facebook. And it's not just a small sample. It's a huge sample, 5,000 people. And then monitoring people over a range of different aspects of their lives. They not only looked at mental health, I think they also looked at interactions and also the depth of interactions, right? How people related to each other both in real life and online, and how people express their value of these relationships in both these spheres as well. And what they found, I think, is that, like you opened the show, people are more miserable after using Facebook. Mm-hmm. However, there is a bit of a conundrum, perhaps. Mm-hmm. We don't know what these people's mental health status was before the start of the study. Mm-hmm. So there is still the other side of the debate that perhaps people who are less satisfied with their lives are more likely to use Facebook. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the scope of the study, when you look at the depth of the study, and of course, the researchers took this factor into consideration as well. They quite, you know, clearly, honestly stated as a limitation. Mm-hmm. But I think the overall results still warrant a lot of attention, regardless of people's mental health before using Facebook. And even if people had poor mental health, I think this is a sure sign that says that Facebook is going to make your mental health even worse.
Mm-hmm. Another point as well in terms of what they tracked is body mass index. So they looked at weight as
That's
well.
Right, yeah, I remember
so that's
now,
an interesting part of it. So this is really holistic and quite comprehensive. And now it will be interesting to see if there are any studies that refute this. But like you said, this confirms a lot of, I guess, what we intuitively feel when we get onto Facebook. One of the things that they pointed out was this dynamic of comparison that we end up in if we're going to use it, right? So we're constantly being presented with nice, happy lives. And on the surface, this is not a bad thing, right? It's supposed to be encouraging, maybe positively reinforcing, but that's not the outcome that they got.
No. But the other thing also, when it comes to self-comparison, I think I remember reading this in the study, or the report, the study, that said that even how people like comments is also determined by how they think other people are going to perceive them.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So the comparison is really on multiple levels. It's comparing other people's lives and also having an imagined sort of a social sort of monitoring of themselves. And I need to like this statement so that I will be perceived in a certain way. Or if I don't say this, people are going to perceive this thing about me. So that's the other comparison that I think affects people in their use of Facebook and how they feel about it afterwards.
Yeah, that's a good point about one of the details that the study points out, that the more you like, the unhappier you are. So that's that correlation that they draw. And I mean, they don't use this term because it's a more quantitative approach, but social capital comes to mind in that you want to know who likes your status and what kind of person they are. If they're popular, you feel a bit more affirmed, and you would like other people's statuses to sort of keep up, especially if those people are of certain reputation, right? So this is this game that you play on Facebook onto finding out, mapping out where you are, I guess, in the rat race, so to speak, social rat race that you end up in. Now, what I wonder is, like you said, there's always this question of assumptions, right? Is it necessarily the platform that does this? Or is it already an attitude that's wired to us, right? Given how we're socialized, given especially the emphasis on adult users, right? The fact that we're trying to stabilize our careers, we're trying to find love, we're trying to be politically recognized, so on and so forth. All those things gives us an anxiety about our worth in society, right? And then this just is absorbed by social media use, right? So it's not necessarily, it's also, I wonder, is it necessarily the platform or is it just the way that we're socialized? And now Facebook just heightens that.
Mm. No, I think we all have a need for affirmation, right? We all want to be liked. We all want to be told, good job, you know, thank you so much. We all want that. And perhaps we don't get it enough in our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, perhaps I think I'm a really good driver, but the moment people see me behind a wheel, the assumption that because I'm a woman, I'm automatically a bad driver, mm-hmm. right? And I want ways to dispel that. And therefore, I document these things on social media, for example. And there's affirmation that I am indeed a good driver. Mm-hmm. For, you know, that's one example. Or you think you're a really good cook and you put in a lot of time into cooking. You know, and I'm you know, and this is something that we overlook because we have cooking shows on television that make it look it's okay. You know, it's you can produce things in
it's
10 minutes.
It's easy and clean.
In 10 minutes, yeah. You can have a meal, which is not the truth.
And you
know?
Don't show the cleaning up part.
Exactly.
Which is also frustrating.
And sometimes the entire process can take up to 4 hours, right? And in a typical family meal, you spend that much time preparing the meal. Everybody sits down, eats, and gets up and go. And the eating is done in 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then the, you know, the cleaning up afterwards takes longer. So I want affirmation for that. And mm-hmm. therefore, I take pictures of my meal, you know, the plating, whatever it is, and I put it up and I get that affirmation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So I suppose there is an innate need in us for this kind of thing. But because of the way our lives are now, we may not get it enough. We are all wired differently, as you know, we always say. Some have more needs than others. And a platform like Facebook, I think, provides a very quick, easy, in a way, safe way to do this as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, safe in a feeble sense, right? Because I think what this what this shows is that it's a sort of a very false sense of security.
It's a very superficial sort of, you know, veneer.
Mm-hmm. In that it happens, it as in the joy or that boost of self-esteem happens as quickly as it goes away, right? So you get that shot in the arm, so to speak, and then you want to kind of grasp it, but it's virtual, right? And then the feed's already moving. So wait a minute, where did that feeling go? I better like something else. And then you get an interaction there and you try to stay with that high, and then it goes away, right? Because there's this endless stream of like traffic of posts.
Yeah. And I think to a certain extent, it's also self-defeating. Because mm-hmm. I'm going back to my cooking analogy and I just thought of something. Mm-hmm. I might be a new cook and I first post a picture of a very simple curry puff that I made. And then I get however many likes and comments. And I think, okay, so I want more. And then I make it more complicated and more complicated. And in my head, I'm actually stressing myself because the time it took to make a curry puff is a lot more different than the time it takes to make, say, I don't know, roast beef or whatever it is, or even or even like, you know, ayam masak lemak, right?
Right, right.
It's a lot more complicated. But then you keep doing this because you want more, and you keep wanting more, and then therefore you're becoming more and more anxious and more stressed about it.
And the response will never match the amount of effort you put in.
No.
So there'll never be. You'll need maybe for like, you know, curry puff, you know, 40 likes will do. But for ayam masak lemak, you'll need 1,000 likes, or else you're not going to feel that your effort was worthwhile. But more on that in the next part of the show. We talk about the emotional games that we get locked into on Facebook, but now backed on some serious data. So I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan. This is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9. You're listening to Digital Desires. Vizla Kumarisan is here alongside myself, Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, and we're talking about the misery of Facebook, now backed with some serious research from Yale. And in the first part of the show, we summarized some of the key findings of this longitudinal study was done over 3 years. 5,000 adults were sampled, and they looked at a very holistic view of social media use, including online socializing, offline socializing, and of course, mental health and even body mass index. And the conclusion is that the more you use it, the worse you feel. And then we went over some examples of that. One of the things that comes to mind about the emotional game of online life is that it's not really, in particular Facebook, it's not really a good place for grief, right? So there's this term that I learned yesterday, in fact, compulsory happiness, right? This idea that what you should be feeling first and foremost, and most of the time, is happiness, right? We'll put aside a debate on what that means. But when you enter Facebook, 9 times out of 10, what you're expected to see are happy people, right? And this, I think, creates, like you said, especially when we seek affirmation, this pressure to meet other people at their supposed level of happiness, right? But we don't really know the supposed level of happiness because all we see are their photos and their statuses. But that's all we work with. And when we try to catch up, of course, we're going to feel miserable.
Absolutely. And, you know, even the whole concept of happiness, happiness is fleeting. Happiness, you know, it's very hard to sustain it. Happiness is very different from joy. And this is what I've also learned lately, right? And we tend to confuse the two. And there's a lot more focus now on happiness. There's a whole industry on happiness, right? And like you said, you know, if all we have to go by are photographs or comments people make on Facebook, it makes it look like it is a permanent state, which is absolutely false, right? Happiness is not permanent, you know. And we keep deluding ourselves that that this is not happening to us, and therefore we're not good enough, and therefore something is wrong with our lives, and that drives us deeper into mental health distress.
Why is it that we are more predisposed to show that, right? What makes grieving openly or showing your sadness more difficult?
I think, firstly, there's this whole perception that, you know, you have to be strong, right? And therefore, if you cry, if you show that you are sad, if you don't show a smiling self, it is a sign that you are not strong. Of course, I say not strong, but, you know, the other term for that is weak, right? And nobody wants to be that. That's one. And number two, I think a lot of people are extremely uncomfortable with grief. One, that's a lot of discomfort about grief, but also just generally any form of negative news. People are uncomfortable. They don't know what to say. They don't know how to respond. And that becomes very difficult social situation to manage. And I think we've talked about this before. If you are meeting in real life, there are all these nuances in communication that helps us deal with these kinds of things in a different way. It doesn't make it any easier. But, you know, and that's missing on a conversation or relationship that's mediated by screens and keyboards.
You know, I've always stuck there because typically people will announce a sad news, right? Now, this is maybe 20% of the overall experience of Facebook, where a loved one passes away, a pet dies, one loses a job or something like that, and there'll be a status about it. And it might be somebody I more or less know online, right? And I'm always torn because I'm like, okay, I want to be there for this person. What there means, I'm using scare quotes here, because virtually, you know, there isn't quite there. But at the same time, I don't want to trivialize it either, right? So there I'll just put, I'm sorry for your loss, and then maybe with a little shrug. And that always leaves me feeling somehow insincere, right? Because I wonder if this is necessarily the place for that sort of interaction, you know? And I don't know, I haven't gotten that right yet, you know, because I think on one hand, people would say, don't take it too seriously, just Facebook, but then something serious just happened. And I don't know. I mean, you can go to the, now you have that emoji feature, you can just say sad, right? But then that's just an emoji. So how does one make this adjustment, right? Or is that adjustment not worth making, right? So it's already happening. So on one hand, to say, this is the world that we live in, this is how we express ourselves, right? But it comes at a cost, right, of maybe risking trivializing some serious emotions. So, I mean, I don't know. I really am stuck there.
Firstly, I don't know if many other people would put this much like thought as you are
yeah,
into these kinds of things. And sometimes I think it's kind of a scary place to be inside your head.
Yeah, yeah, it is right? actually. I don't recommend anybody in there. So
no, but yeah, so but how many people actually don't think about it and just put a standard response? You've been socialized to respond in certain ways to certain kinds of news. Mm-hmm. If someone says, I'm having a baby, you're socialized to say, wow, yeah. congratulations, or whatever it is. No one says, oh, I'm so sorry, mm-hmm. right? You know, no one says, I'm so sorry, the next 9 months of your life, you're going to go through all this, right? No one says yeah. those things. Yeah. And so therefore, if you put something, if you say something sad or something bad, people are just automatically, you know, they go into the automatic mode of just saying the first thing that comes to their mind yeah. because that's what everybody says. And these are also the kinds of conversations that happen on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, I seeing a meme a few years ago that, you know, I got a new job and everybody hits the like button. I've got a new baby, everybody hits a like button. And then I just found out I've got cancer and then they show how many likes that statement got, right? Mm-hmm. Because people just don't know how to respond to these
yeah.
things.
Yeah. Facebook, if you're listening to this, we need a sad Facebook. I think that's the kind of like the company, the compulsory happiness of happy Facebook. I think, and it's a serious question, right? Because I think there's something about grieving.
Do you need a special Facebook for that? Shouldn't Facebook be a platform for just regular human
Unfortunately,
reality?
The data has proven otherwise. It's quite far beyond this. But what I'm trying to kind of wonder too is just that, right? Like, what is going to happen to grieving? Because I think mourning is a skill. You know, things fall apart. You lose your attachments. You lose your foundation, right? And it can really go south very, very easily. You can yeah. really lose your bearings, or you can say, this is a realistic loss of support, loss of a friendship, loss of a lover, loss of a family member that I'm going through, and I need to be wise about it, right? And where happiness finds a nice place on Facebook, feigned happiness or whatever, is not welcoming that sort of grayness.
Is it not really, or is it how people are using it? Because now that you mentioned grief, I do recall, I never read the entire post, but Sheryl Sandberg, who is the CEO of Facebook, she lost her husband quite tragically mm-hmm. and quite suddenly. And I do remember her post on Facebook following that making the rounds on social media. And she, you know, she had a really long, heartfelt status, I think, that described how she was experiencing the loss of her husband. And I read her book Lean In, and I, you know, she values her husband a lot and she relies on him a lot, you know, as a partner and things like that.
When I saw people that I knew were facing real adversity, I would say, how are you? Figuring if they wanted to talk, they would talk. But it's so hard to bring this up. Well, how am I? Okay, my husband just died. It's hard to get out of bed in the morning. I don't know how to parent my children alone. And I'm quite certain I'll never feel a moment of happiness again. I mean, that's not an answer to the question, how are you? But if you say to someone, how are you today? I know you are suffering. If you want to talk about it, I'm here. Then people can bring it up.
So that is one example, I think, of someone and a very public persona, Sheryl Sandberg, mm-hmm. grieving mm-hmm. on Facebook.
Yeah, although I would say that is aided by maybe her capacity to express it well.
Perhaps there's that.
Which you don't quite need to be happy.
Right.
You just need a smiley photo.
Doesn't that then go back to what we have been talking about a lot on this show? It's not so much the platforms that are the problems. Mm-hmm. It's that people have not given enough value to these skills.
Yeah, yeah.
How to express yourself. How to really think about, you know, I take back my statement that it's a scary place to be in your head. But mm-hmm. perhaps that is a skill that people need. Mm-hmm. Like to really think about how we should respond in different situations. Like if you really valued a person and they shared with you a piece of bad news mm-hmm. and they did it on social media, what is it you need to say? Mm-hmm. And, you know, does what you need to say have to be said on Facebook, or can you just call that person and say, I just read the status and this is what I have to say to you?
Yeah. Or sometimes I just send a personal message.
Or a personal message.
That's sort of the bad. But even then, And you have to risk a bit of the awkwardness sometimes, because sometimes, like, I don't know this person, but this person, it feels like my gut tells me a personal message might be a good sort of compromise, right, between sort of calling. Or,
and sometimes you don't have to say anything. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true.
So I think one of the lines that's coming back to me from reading the report is that it's not so much the quantity of the Facebook use that's the problem, but it's the quality that is the issue.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So if we can, if people can change their perceptions of how to use these platforms, they don't have to be bad. They don't have to have such negative impact. Facebook itself is a neutral medium. It doesn't have any value. It's how people use it. It's the values that people place on it that then impacts them, right?
I agree. Though it's a feedback loop, right? In a sense that they look at what contemporary society is like, right? They look at how people prefer to communicate, how people prefer to share their experiences. And they will try to design and upgrade their features based on that, right? So it's this call and response dynamic that it has with the world, because it only works because it speaks to a real way of relating that we already kind of practice. Mm. But then that will bind us to certain limitations, right? Because the emojis are going to be, they're going to be more happy emojis than they're going to be sad emojis, right? That's just the way it's going to be, unfortunately. So in that sense, yes, you're right. I think there's a lot of autonomy that every user has. We can also choose how much time we can spend on that or want to spend on that. But it's also a question of like being aware that this is not going to let you express yourself fully. I think certain emotions require a little bit more thought, right? So grieving, being able to write, having a platform because maybe you're more of a personality, right? And then people are going to give you more of a benefit of doubt. But fundamentally, though, we have to, in addition to, I think, reflecting about our impulses, know what this medium is offering and what it doesn't. Yeah.
So I think on that vein, I think what you said, that your call to Facebook to have a sad Facebook isn't so much to have a separate platform, but to actually make the interface a lot more sensitive to the intricacies of just being human.
Yeah. You know, it's not unusual. It's a genre thing, right? So you might want to go to watch a tragedy, a Greek tragedy, because you want a bit of catharsis. And you know, if you want to be uplifted, you can watch Friends or something, right? So I still like the idea of a sad Facebook where we consciously go there knowing what to expect. That when you go in there, you're going to be a bit cathartic. You can cry together or something. But I don't know. I mean, that's just me being fanciful. But in addition, since we're talking about research right now, I just want to add some background to what else is being said, you know, scientifically. And I'm going to post this on our Facebook page so people can look at the links and find the details for themselves. Let me just read this excerpt. Prior research has shown that the use of social media may detract from face-to-face relationships, reduce investment in meaningful activities, increase sedentary behavior by encouraging more screen time, lead to internet addiction, and erode self-esteem through unfavorable social comparison. Self-comparison can be a strong influence on human behavior, and because people tend to display the most positive aspects of their lives on social media, it is possible for an individual to believe that their own life compares negatively to what they see presented by others. So this is an excerpt from that study.
Right.
And it has links to all those things. Internet addiction, which I think is serious right now.
Absolutely.
You know, I got to get myself checked because I don't know, right? Because you're always sort of wedded to this. I might be hooked. Now, the study also says that in the end, on aggregate, real-life interaction makes us feel better.
Yes. Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, yeah, to conclude that excerpt is that put your phones down, go out, and actually meet people face-to-face.
Yeah.
And put your phones away when you're meeting people face-to-face.
Is there a way, though, that we can be more positive? Because I'm more cautious. So I like technology, but I'm very cautious. But I wouldn't say that this as a whole is a positive step for mankind. You know what I mean?
But it's about balance, isn't it?
Yeah, in a way it is. Yeah.
I think one aspect of the study was that the participants had to name four people or eight people they could rely on for certain things. Perhaps this is an exercise we should all be doing regularly, right? Mm. List four people whom we can turn to if we are in this situation, or who do you call when you are feeling bad? Do you have someone to talk to when you're experiencing these kinds of emotions? And having that is as important as having X number of friends on Facebook, mm-hmm. right? Because I think one of the things that the study says is that it's about a measure of true relationships.
Yeah.
And not all your friends on Facebook are what can be actually defined as friends.
I have made a lot of friends via Facebook, you know, especially after coming back from the States for a long time. I just needed to build a community, and really a lot of close friendships were built from that. But that said, I also know that time has shown that a lot of relationships aren't that genuine to begin with, right? Because they really are just meant for that sort of burst of
banter,
or even just like really visual sticker sharing sort of interaction, you know.
Right.
I don't want to devalue that either, but there is a time and place for everything, right? So I think a good exercise would just be that too. Like, can you think of 8 people you know whose bond with you transcend that divide, right? It's both digital and real life and more, right? That you can count them for emergencies. You can count them for vulnerabilities.
And it's not just family.
Not just family, correct. As opposed to people who are just sustained by online connections, yeah. So closing thoughts, Vizsla, before we wrap up?
Closing thoughts, I think when I read the study, I thought, yeah, Facebook is bad. But I think now, after our discussion, I go back to the point I raised just now. I don't think Facebook in itself is bad. It's how we use it that determine whether it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. And obviously, how we are using it is actually having a negative repercussion on us. Mm-hmm. Perhaps Facebook has certain responsibilities, but I think we are all agentic autonomous beings, and therefore if we want to change its impact on us, we have to use it differently.
Yeah, I'm a bit more dystopian in that sense, because I know that Mark Zuckerberg now wants to get rid of smartphones eventually.
Oh, yes,
we can just
yes.
zap into each other's minds. We can send those stickers and emojis directly, and it'll flash into your eye bulbs, and there's no need to use your fingers even. But we might see that, but in the meantime, while waiting for that world to come, I think that...
Or doing something to stop that.
Doing something to stop that. I think that feeling yourself out as you use social media, those are these moments of awkwardness or uneasiness as you engage with these machines, should signal an occasion to reflect, right? What are these feelings doing to me? How are they sustained? How long have I been putting up with this? And then that should kind of be an occasion for you to think about, okay, who are my real connections? How dependent am I on this? Not just to connect with people, but to feel good in a certain way. I think, while we have to make do with this, because you can't really do anything without social media, especially Facebook, there's a way we can do it more thoughtfully. So, yeah. Anyway, I guess that's us for this week. You can email us at biggerpicture@bfm.my or tweet at BFM Radio.
And do visit our Facebook page. It's just look for Digital Desires on Facebook and you'll find us there. Like us, follow us, and be updated. And we will put up links to this study if you would like to learn more. And, you know, you have to take charge of your health, and in order to do that, you've got to read up on this, know what it's about. So visit our Facebook page and we'll put all the information there.
Yeah, since you're liking and commenting and stuff, like and comment on our page. You know, I mean, it's new and everything, it's traffic, traffic could do better, but we are starting out and we like to hear what you think. So yeah, once again, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizsla Kumarisan, and this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.